Well, as we return to the church this weekend, much has changed since last weekend. Our Christmas season has ended, and we're now in the season which we commonly refer to as ordinary time. I kind of miss the Christmas trees and the stars and the angels all around. It was so beautiful at Christmas, the way the church was decorated, and now it seems a little ordinary. Things are back to as usual a little bit. Our church is the way it normally looks. But you know that word ordinary time, the word that describes the season, first of all, ordinary, isn't meant to refer to the idea that this season is somehow plain or just, you know, useless or the same and not really distinct. Even the word ordinary refers to the fact that each Sunday is given an ordinal number. The first Sunday, the second, the third. So we have the second Sunday in ordinary time. So that's where we get the term ordinary time. But even that is a bit of a misnomer, because in Latin, if you look at the way it would appear in the Missal in Latin, you won't find ordinary time written. Instead, what you find is the phrase tempus per annum. Doesn't look anything like ordinary time, because it's not. The official title of this season is Tempus Per Annum, which means in Latin, time through the year. The time as we go through the year. It implies a journey of sorts as time passes through the year. I think that's a much better understanding of this season. Unlike Christmas that we've just passed through and Easter where we'll soon be headed, there's no particular great historical event that we focus on during this time through the year of ordinary time. Rather, we journey with Jesus in this in-between period. We walk with him as the disciples walked with him in what might be called the ordinary journey in between those great pinnacle moments. And perhaps this is the most important time. Far from being ordinary, this is the time when the important stuff gets done in our life. Because sure, there are those times in our life where we can look to the big mountaintop experiences, the events that stick out like Christmas and Easter, the pinnacles of our faith, and say, those are really special. But most of our life and most of our liturgical year is not spent on the mountaintop. Our lives are spent in the day-to-day living in between the big mountaintop experiences in which our faith seems so easy and strong. We have the beauty of the figurative, the Christmas trees and the decorations and everything that seems to say, this is beautiful and wonderful. Most of our life is not there. Most of it's in the just normal day-to-day chores of going to work, getting up every day, doing the things we're supposed to be doing. So maybe ordinary isn't such a bad word to describe that. But our scripture passages today tell us something very important. As we are in this ordinary time, right at the beginning, we see today this story of Jesus' first miracle, his first manifestation as the Messiah. And it says that as a result of this, the disciples begin to believe in him and follow him. Now, you know, I've got some favorite movies in which they often will refer to a particular parish as Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle. And that title always kind of struck out to me, what is a worthless miracle? And certainly, turning water into wine is certainly not a worthless miracle. But if we were to think of all the miracles that Jesus might choose for his first, you know, we might think of, you know, healing some sick person or raising someone from the dead or, you know, something big like parting the Red Sea like Moses did or something like that. You know, something big to say, hey, the Messiah is here and on the scene. Believe in me because here I am. You know, it's something big. Instead, we get a miracle, certainly, water into wine. Why that? It does kind of seem like Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle, a little bit. What's going on here? Why does Jesus choose that? It seems almost just happenstance, too. He wasn't even planning on it. Mary just happens to notice, Hey, look at that. The wine just happened to run out. Jesus, think you can do something about it? I mean, it's going to be embarrassing. Fix it. You know, it's like it's just kind of coincidence that this happened and Jesus happened to, fine, go make some wine. And is that really what's going on? I think this is rather deliberately chosen by Jesus as his first miracle because in a very important way, it sets the tone for what Jesus' mission is all about and what God's plan is ultimately for us in the age of the Messiah. If you think about water, it's plain. How many of us, when we go out for a nice fancy meal, an Italian meal, perhaps, would say, just water? Yeah, something seems almost missing. It's just a little too plain. Rather, you go over the wine list. You got to find just the right wine to pair it with your meal to make the right flavors come out. Water we kind of recognize as plain. You know, boring, ordinary to some extent. But what does Jesus do? He takes the ordinary, the water, and he says, all right, he takes that and he makes it rather into something extraordinary, something sweet and tasty, something that even the head waiter points out is, this is good wine. That's really deliberately chosen by Jesus because that's what he does in our lives. He takes what would be the ordinary day-to-day tasks of ordinary time, getting up, going to work, taking care of the kids, doing the dishes, doing the laundry. Jesus says none of that with him anymore has to be just ordinary, just the stuff of life. Rather, it has a chance to be extraordinary. That's what this sign at Cana is really all about. The time of the Messiah has come, and it means no longer just boring, ordinary water. The time of fulfillment that Isaiah speaks about when he talks about on God's holy mountain, choice wines, juicy food. I love those images, and that's what the Messiah brings for us today. A lot of times we would tend to think of God's plan for us as maybe taking away our fun, God's rules restricting our freedom. Maybe we see the Messiah coming and imposing God's law. Maybe that's our view of God, some tyrant that wants to give us rules through his church and its leaders that keep us from fun. Our gospel today gives us a very different picture. It says quite the opposite. It says when the Messiah is now on the scene, rather he takes the plain and makes it something extraordinary. Water into wine. God's laws and commandments take the boringness of our life and make it tasty. Delectable, even choice wines. We shouldn't miss, finally, this little to do with the steward. It's not even just any wine that Jesus makes. Rather, there's this whole little to do about, you know, most people serve the good wine first when everyone is still kind of under control. And then after they've drunken a lot and maybe they can't quite be so discerning about their wine anymore, then you just give them what's left over. Apparently this wedding had really gone on because they've even gone through that. But here Jesus, the wine he makes, this is the good wine that has been saved for the end. We shouldn't miss that either. I was thinking about this the other night. What makes a wine good? I'm not exactly much of a wine connoisseur, but when I talk to people who know their wine, you know, I'll ask them, why is a wine that's like 200 years old good? I don't know of many other things in life that, you know, get better as they get old. You know, apparently this doesn't work with beer. You get it 200 years old and it's not good anymore. But wine, apparently 200 years old is really good. And I asked someone who knows about this thing, why is that? It's like, well, because when wine sits and it ages, there's all these flavors that they take time to come out. And the older the wine gets, the more the flavors start to interact and they create more flavors and the interactions start to create all these tastes. And someone who really knows their wine, when they drink one of these old aged wines, can pick out 13 different kind of flavors all interacting in this one wine. It's It's almost like drinking a work of art a little bit. And I thought, you know, what a great image for our life and our relationship with God. It takes time for our relationship with God to really get to that point where we can look back and really savor it like we would savor an old aged wine. I think the same is true in the reason Jesus chose this image of marriage. It's the people that get to that 50th, 60th anniversary that are able to look back and say, we've been through a lot. And it's that commitment that we made on our wedding day that we had to recommit to every day of our marriage, good times and bads. You look back and there's all these different flavors all mixed in. You're able to look back and savor the totality of commitment in that marriage because precisely of all the good and bad and all the flavors that mix together. Same is true of our relationship with God. If we want the good wine, the best wine saved for the end, and we got to persevere to the end. We've got to keep at it long enough to get to the point where we can look back and say, yeah, there were hard times, there were mountaintops, there were valleys, and all that has time to age and mix together that we come to the end of our life and say, it's good. It's good wine. All the flavors mixed in there together make a bit of a work of art of our lives. And that's what God does with us. He's the artist. He's making good wine out of our lives, taking the ordinary to make something extraordinary if we let him. How does that happen? Mary has the key. Her last words in all of Scripture, do whatever he tells you. If we want to have the good wine in our lives, that's the answer. Do whatever he tells you.